You're listening to Cross Currents from KLW News. I'm Holly Kernan. We now turn to the topic of slavery. It doesn't often make the headlines, but the practice is alive and well in the 21st century. According to an investigation in the San Francisco Public Press, there are more people enslaved today than at any other time in history. The U.S. State Department estimates that those enslaved through human trafficking ranges from 4 million to 27 million people. Human trafficking is the fastest-growing criminal business in the world, according to the State Department. It ranks only second to drug trafficking in profitability, bringing in an estimated $32 billion annually. The majority of those trafficked are young adults between the ages of 18 and 24, but children also make up a large part of the slave trade. In a joint investigation between the Public Press, El Tecolote, and New America Media, reporters delved into the dark world of human trafficking.
Oh, it must be hell. It must be total hell. Because she probably also has glimpses of how other people are living, unlike in the village where surrounding Lucky Reddy's home, it is utter poverty. So she probably thinks that's how it is. But here she sees people driving in fancy cars, enjoying so much freedom, being allowed to, you know, dress the way they want. But they are forced to dress in a certain way. They're never given an opportunity to go to school or improve better their chances of a better life. So, and they're also limited in the communicating with their families back home. It must be, I think, nothing short of hell.
Viji Sundaram is a reporter with New America Media and part of the Public Press investigative team that shed light on modern-day slavery.
So I'm wondering if you could start by telling us about the Lacquaretti Bali Reddy case in 2000 and what happened.
Okay. Now, Lacquaretti Bali Reddy was one of the richest, if not the richest, landlord in Berkeley. He had about 1,000 apartments, rental apartments, as well as he had a restaurant, which is a very, very popular Indian restaurant called Pasant. And he, you know, he's been... It was not known at all in the community that he was bringing young women, young girls, into the country to make them work in his restaurants as well as maintenance on his building, and giving them very little money, and sometimes no money at all. From what one of the victims told me, he believed that the fact that he was letting them stay in one of those apartments and giving them food was pay enough. And nothing would have come to light but for the accident that happened in November of 1999, when a girl in one of his buildings, a 17-year-old girl, died of a gas leak, which happened in the apartment building. And Lacquaretti, the other girl in the apartment, there were three of them living there at that point, but two were in the building when the leak occurred. There were two sisters, one 17 and one 15. And the third woman who was living there, an 18-year-old woman, walked into the apartment and saw this girl lying sort of unconscious and the other girl semi-conscious. And she called Lacquaretti. And then they'd all been in this country for just about 3 or 4 months. They didn't know the language. They had no idea how the law works in this country. So she called Lacquaretti. He came with his men and carried the girl who was, I think she was dead already, but he took her out of the room. And the third girl, the victim, who was very conscious and aware of everything, was making a racket on the street. Some passers-by noticed her. And then the police came and the whole thing came to light, and they did a little investigation and found that this guy had been trafficking young girls into the country.
So who were these girls?
These were girls from a village from the same village he comes from in India. It's called Vel Vadam. It's in a state called Andhra Pradesh. And Lacquaretti was the king of that village, so to speak, because of his immense wealth. Not just the wealth he had earned while in the US, but he comes from a wealthy family of landlords. And because of his wealth, he wielded a lot of power over these people. Plus, many of the girls he brought here and whom he had working in his home in India were from the so-called, you know, untouchable community. They were virtually voiceless even there.
Even back home.
Even
in India.
Back home.
And he sort of promised their parents that he would be giving them a better life, right?
He did. He kept saying, you know, you could enjoy the kind of lifestyle I enjoy in America. All you need to do is, you know,
give me your daughter.
And many of the mothers themselves, because of their wretched poverty, you know, they didn't even question this guy. They just assumed that, or maybe, you know, some people say they were complicit in all this and that they were aware that this was going to happen to their daughters, that they were going to be used for sexual servitude. But it was desperate. And, you know, they have this horrible dowry system in India where when you marry your daughter, you have to give her a substantial amount of money, give the groom's people a substantial amount of money. So it was a combination of factors, casteism, feudalism, the cultural stuff going on in India. And so Lucky Reddy was like a godsend, virtually.
Okay, so this comes to light because of that gas
exactly.
leak and mm-hmm. the two girls dying.
It was investigated initially as an accidental case. But as Berkeley police began investigating this guy, they found this other thing going on, the sexual servitude and labor violations, immigration fraud violations, because he brought these girls here as the children of people who were working in his restaurant and other businesses, you know. Mm-hmm. They were masquerading as their parents, went there, brought these girls here.
And prosecutors say that, so this case ended up changing a lot of laws around human trafficking in the U.S., and I want to ask you about that. But when prosecutors tried to try this case, it was very difficult because there weren't laws about human trafficking, right?
Right.
So explain that.
Well, this happened, as I said, in late 1999.
And it was prosecuted in 2000, right?
Yeah. In 2000, he was charged with a whole bunch of things. Labor violations, immigration fraud, trafficking young girls. They call it transporting young girls for sexual servitude. At that point, there was no laws at all, not even federal laws. The federal law came into effect a little later in the year, back in 2000. And the state had no laws at all. And, you know, some women's rights activists say that nobody knew really what human trafficking was in America.
Until this case. And then there were some laws that were passed after this case as a result of it, like AB 22. What did that do?
Well, AB 22, Sally Lieber, former then Assemblywoman Sally Lieber, who sponsored the bill, acknowledged that the Lucky Reddy case was what influenced the AB 22 law. The law provided criminal prosecution for traffickers. If you trafficked an adult person, it was anywhere from 3, 4 to 5 years in prison. And if it was a minor, it was up to 8 years. So it could be 4, 6, or 8, depending on the seriousness of the crime. And it also had provides for some restitution. But, you know, it was really not much at all. And you know, Lucky Reddy and he was not the only one charged in this. There were several family members, but he got the largest
sentence. Which was what, 97 months?
Months. He was supposed to. Well, initially the prosecutor said for the kind of crimes he had committed, he should get 38 years. And then a whole lot of plea bargaining went on behind the scenes. And finally, the prosecution convicted him two counts of sexual abuse, trafficking for sexual abuse, one count of filing a false statement on his immigration and labor violations.
Huh. And where is he now?
He's back in his country. He was
he's back in India.
Yeah, he's back in India. He got out in April 2008. He registered as a sex offender under Megan's Law. But he's back in India, and he's enjoying the same hero worshipping that went on before this happened, which seems to suggest that, you know, he's paid off everyone. even the police, they're not doing anything to investigate this kind of thing, because it is a crime even in India, even though he tried to take the cultural defense and say, you know, sex with a minor is okay in India. That's not true. And especially outside of marriage, no.
And you went and visited his village, right?
I did.
What
I
went did you to find Vandam. When you went there?
Well, what I found was this kind of a mindset among the villagers, that even though this story had, the papers had carried the story of what happened in Berkeley, the people there still thought he was faultless, and that was he shouldn't be blamed. Even the parents of the two girls, the one of whom died and the sister who survived, even they said, you know, when I asked the mother, don't you want to bring the sister back, the 15-year-old back, after all that's happened? She said, no, as long as she's happy there. She was convinced that Lucky Reddy was going to provide, give them the happiness she couldn't.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan, and I'm speaking with reporter V.G. Sundaram about human trafficking. New America Media and the San Francisco Public Press recently published an investigative series about modern-day slavery. I asked V.G. what happened to the kidnapped girls.
Some of them are here. Some, as soon as the case, the whole thing broke, Lucky Reddy shipped them, some of them off to India very quickly. And some of them are here. They, you know, they're given a new identity, and they've started life afresh. But there is a lot of trauma. They're still going through a lot of trauma.
And you did you were you able to talk with some of them about?
Yeah, I did, but I wasn't, you know, on the condition that I wouldn't disclose where they were or their names. Yes, mm-hmm. I was, and it, you know, it was very sad to listen to some of the things they said, because, you know, one girl said she's not a girl anymore. She's a young woman. She said she wakes up at night and feels that Lucky Reddy is in her room. And then she has to turn on all the lights to make sure he's not there. And she needs sleeping pills to give her a good night's rest.
So New American Media, El Tecolote, and the public press, the San Francisco Public Press, took on this big investigation into mm-hmm. human trafficking mm-hmm. Because it's happening all around us, and yet we know so little about it.
Yeah, the thing was, you know, when it was actually the San Francisco Public Press that came up with this idea of let's do a package and let's do it in collaboration with NAM and El Tecolote. And at that point, we sort of suspected that maybe AB-22 was influenced by the Lucky Reddy case. And then when I did that part of the story, yes, we found that when we spoke to Sally Lieber, she said, yes, it was very much a part, reason why we introduced AB-22. But we also, another reason was the CASE Act, which is a new act started by an organization called California Against Slavery. And they are trying to get this on the November ballot because they feel that it stands a better chance of it passing, of it happening, rather than going through the assembly, California lawmakers. Because the thing is, when Nancy O'Malley of the Alameda County District Attorney said, she said, you know, anytime there's a punishment clause in any law, it's likely not to get out of committee, because people don't want to crowd up the already overcrowded prisons, and they thought that it stood a better chance of passing as an initiative, getting the voters, people to say this is needed, because they feel that and it's true, the California AB-22 does not have, it's not strong enough. Now, the Initiative CASE Act, on the other hand, it offers a life sentence. And then there's also a fine of $1.5 million, which would be a lot of deterrent for people who are thinking of trafficking in children. And also, you know, the police will be trained better to detect cases like what happened in Berkeley. Because as the civil attorney who filed a civil lawsuit on class action lawsuit on behalf of many of these victims said, if the police had been better trained, they would have been able to detect this happening, because these girls used to be standing on scaffolding and painting buildings, 15-year-old girls, and instead of being in school. And they stood out because they were in traditional Indian garb. Hmm. And, you know, it was actually the Berkeley High students who spotted these girls in 1999 and wrote about it in the school paper. But even at that point, see, nobody, they didn't.
So this is all in plain sight.
Plain sight.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, let me ask you about that. So the U.S. State Department estimates that between 4 and 27 million people are enslaved through human trafficking. Now, that range seems very wide and sort of absurd. So why are the numbers so unclear?
Because it's hard to find, it's hard to detect a human trafficked victim, to spot them. You know, if you see a girl walking the streets, turning tricks, how do you know whether she's a trafficked woman or is she just a prostitute? It's tough to detect it.
So how prevalent do you think this is? Like, where is it around us?
I think it's very, very prevalent. It's very prevalent. And even trafficking for labor reasons. Right now, California is trying to get the domestic workers Bill of Rights. Mm-hmm. How do you know when they come from a culture. I can only speak from this particular case because I've investigated it.
This is India.
India.
Yeah.
They come from a culture where, you know, things are accepted. For a child to work in a house, even though child labor is illegal
officially
in India.
Illegal, yeah.
It's violated all the time. So when you come to this country and you're brought to this country and this practice continues, they don't know this is really wrong and that they have recourse. They can go to law officials and complain. Now, these girls, they had all these cultural things, you know, and they had language barriers. How do they know that they could have gotten help through the law officials? Because their concept of what law officials can help, how they can help, is very different from how it is here. So they kept quiet. And this happens even when people bring young girls to work as servants in their homes. In clear violation of all labor laws, they just grin and bear it. They feel, and their passports are impounded, like in this case, in the Berkeley landlord's case, he kept all the passports of all these little girls. So what recourse do they have?
So Vijay, you know, you've done this big investigation into human trafficking. What would you like people who are listening to you right now to know, people like you and me?
Well, you know, as I was telling you earlier, sometimes this happens in plain sight. When my friends and I, when we went to this restaurant in Berkeley, some of us used to wonder, you know, we used to see these young girls.
You're referring to
Lucky Reddy's Passan restaurant in Berkeley. We used to see these little young women, young girls, cleaning tables. And in fact, one of my friends made an attempt once to talk to some of these girls to find out, why are they doing this part-time? Do they go to school? And when she tried to motion them to come over, Lucky Reddy's, the men in the restaurant, the male staff, shooed them away, you know, didn't want the girls to come and talk to us.
Hmm. That so
should
if
have
you
raised
see
a
signs
red
like
flag.
That, yeah.
You know, I, we never even suspected that this could be happening under our nose. And, you know, so it's always good for people to look out when they see a young woman walking on the street, not to assume she's a prostitute, but could she be a trafficked woman? And I would really like the CASE Act to pass because it offers training to police people to make them more sensitive to these things, to be able to detect human trafficking victims. And there's also the CASE Act also provides for social and legal services for these women. So I would really hope that the act passes.